Thank you so much for agreeing to be on this podcast.
Oh, I'm honored. I really am. Thank you.
I am honored. And so I've read your book. I just want to show it to you because, including the paper towel, it's got all sorts of little tabs and underlines throughout it. I mean, there's some real gems in here, and I can't wait to dig in.
All
Thank
right.
you. All right. Thank you so much. So I'm going to give a little introduction and then we'll just
Is
get into it.
my sound okay?
It's perfect.
Okay, we're having a super windy day in Oklahoma City, so I'm a little nervous about background wind noise, so.
You know what? You're going to hear my chickens. You're
Well,
going to
good.
hear, yeah, you're going to hear my
Okay.
dogs barking at people walking by. So we're just pretty
Awesome.
casual here.
Awesome.
All right. Amy Downs is a survivor and model for change in every way. She survived the Oklahoma City bombing on April 19th, 1995, and went on to transform her life. Hers is a model story of post-traumatic growth and choosing love. And I'm so excited to have Amy with us. Amy is the author of Hope is a Verb, My Journey of Impossible Transformation. Amy, thanks so much for joining us today. Hope is a force that drives you to change. That's kind of how you start out the book, and it's so true. And you are the model of that.
Oh, well, thank you. It's something you have to intentionally do. So every day, even today in my life, I have to really kind of center myself on that, and not fall into victimhood, with the things that life throws at us, So it's a journey.
That is such a good point. The Choose Love movement came out of, me losing my son at Sandy Hook Elementary School. In fact, I don't like to say losing. He was murdered. I didn't lose him. Parents who have kids that were murdered will understand me saying that. I created this program because I knew that if the shooter had been able to give and receive nurturing, healing love, the same message that Jesse wrote on our kitchen chalkboard, that the tragedy would never have happened. I mean, ultimately, he was a victim of his circumstances. And when we're victims, it makes us hopeless. You talk a lot about hope, which I love, and helpless. And when we're in that state, we feel angry. And then it can spiral down like it did in Sandy Hook. And so your book is just this gorgeous example of someone who was a victim and literally was able to transform. It's like I'm reading a book about two people, Amy, and they alternate chapters. And one of them, I have to admit, it wasn't, I was hard for me to read some of the thinking of the old Amy as compared with the new Amy. And part of that, I think, is because I've been through a very similar journey to yours. So I understood it. And I embrace and love the person that I am now after the terrible tragedy. And you talk about that in this book, that there is this new person that emerges, and it's the new normal, and that there's so much benefit to that. Anyway, I'm jumping way ahead because I literally wrote down so many notes to talk to you about. You say hope is a verb. I mean, the whole premise of this book, the title is so amazing to me because I don't think people understand that hope is a verb. I think they think that it's their birthright and that it is their birthright, but that it just should be there. It should be there. And when in reality, we have to work for it. We have to actively see it. It's a conscious effort. And the outcome is so worth it when you put in the effort, but you do have to make effort. And I know that you know that. I'm looking at in the picture, the transformation of you physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. It's so amazing. And that takes courage. And, you know, before I read that in your book, I was looking up the definition of courage again, 8 years later. And I saw that actually it was because I was reading your book, and I saw that courage is described as an adjective. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I understand why the dictionary says that courage is an adjective, but really it's a verb too. Mm-hmm. And you showed a tremendous amount of courage during that day. And I want to get to that. But let's talk about hope a little bit more. On page 82, you say, hope is not a wish or a destination. It's not the distant star in the night sky. Woof. I love the writing. Hope is the jet fuel that propels you to the moon. Hope's true meaning and power is you have the ability to change your future.
Yes. That's absolutely right. You know, you said earlier, you were talking about the downward spiral that we get into when horrible things happen to us. And it can be anything from a health issue to, divorce, like whatever the thing is that hits you hard. And you get into that hopeless, helpless situation. And, you know, for a minute, you're paralyzed. And that minute can be days or a year, you know, different for different people, but you're paralyzed, and it is a downward spiral, and it leads you to depression, and it's a terrible place. And we forget in those moments. And I recently went through this myself again in my life just over this past year. And I had to be reminded, no, I have the ability to move toward a better future than what I'm living in right now. And that is something I can do. And I don't have to treat hope like a wish, like, you know, a genie in a bottle, like, oh, you know, I hope this will happen. No, I can take part in that, in making that happen. And so I had to do that myself just this past year. I had double knee replacement. I had some injuries. And, you know, anytime you go through health issues, boy, that can really set you back, especially if you're an active person and all of a sudden you can't do the things you did before. You have to sit back and reassess and say, okay, given my current situation and my current limitations, what can I do right now to move forward? And when you do that, all of a sudden you're giving yourself power to move forward instead of sitting back and blaming the health issue or blaming the ex-spouse or blaming whatever. All of a sudden now you're saying, regardless of this thing that happened to me, even if it wasn't my fault, and even if it was horrible, I have to take responsibility for where I am right now. Regardless of how I got here, I have to take responsibility and move forward. But when you do that, it really is exciting. It really does power you because you realize I actually have the power to move myself forward, even if it's in the tiniest, smallest increments. And then once you do start taking those tiny steps, the momentum builds and it does bring hope alive in your spirit, you know?
Wow. And this is the second time, I mean, you've done this so many times in your life, the transformation, but this is the second time that you've made a physical transformation, because you went from 355 pounds prior to the Oklahoma City bombing to becoming a triathlete.
Yes, I did an Ironman.
So, you did an Ironman. Iron and you Man. crossed the finish line and heard those words. You are an Amy is an Ironman.
Yes. And that would be, if you would have told me that, If 25 years ago you would have told me this, I would have looked at you and said, you know what, why don't you get a rocket and I'll fly to Mars too? Like, it would have been that crazy. I just, you know, couldn't have imagined it.
It's amazing. I mean, I was thinking, and I think you may have said it in the book, that when the explosion happened, you actually were seated in your office chair and you were turned upside down. Three floors fell on top of you and you were trapped there. And I think just with, it must've been your hand sticking out or some, right? And And then you had an industrial size refrigerator hanging over, right directly over you by one cord, just swinging in the wind. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps the weight saved you, was helpful in saving you. I mean, I always feel like everything in our lives, when we look back on it, there was a reason and a purpose for it.
Exactly. And
gosh. And then the firefighters came and they were searching through the rubble and there were not very many survivors. And they saw your hand, they heard your voice. And then you heard, bomb. And they said, oh, we need to get some equipment. We'll be right back. And you were thinking like, I don't hear that. Oh my gosh. And so you're trapped in this situation and you think that there's going to be another explosion. And then all the thought process that goes on in your head, upside down in your office chair, wondering if the person you were talking to right before the explosion, one of your friends that was standing in front of your desk, is alive, not to mention all your other friends that you worked with. And like people tell me all the time, I can't even imagine going through what you went through with my son. And I read your book and I can't imagine going through that.
You know, I think God just gives us strength at the moment that we need it, I guess, because, you know, same here. Like I can even look back on my own story and think, I don't even know how I made it through that. I was literally buried alive. I could not see anything. It was hard to breathe. And, you know, I hear them screaming, there's another bomb. There's another bomb. We got to go. And my reality in that moment is I am getting ready to die. This is it, you know? And, you know, I don't even have words to describe how terrifying, you know, that situation was. But I look back now and what happened was having those moments of life flashing before my eyes gave me a place of realizing what's really important in life that I maybe would not have realized for quite some time if that hadn't occurred. I didn't want that to happen, but because that did happen, it really did change my life. That those moments changed my life.
And at the time you were a teller at a credit union and one with maybe just not a great attitude either, I might say, which by the way, I've had too. I mean, we can all relate to that, you know, trying to do as minimal amount of work as possible. But, you know, you not only survived the bomb, but you became the CEO of that credit union.
That's just crazy. I think that's so crazy. You know, I previously had flunked college because I couldn't pass a math class, the remedial math class, not even the legitimate one, like the one you have to take to actually take the real math class. I flunked that. And, you know, and then somehow with my amazing math skills, I thought I would get a job as a teller with a cash drawer, you know, and then to think that I'm now the CEO of that credit union. I did go back and get my degree and my master's. So, you know, don't worry, the credit union's in good hands, but it is amazing to me that I was able to do that, you know, and I'm grateful, you know, that I have had the opportunity to achieve those things.
It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. On page 34, you say, we start to believe this life is simply random interactions between the lucky and the unlucky. We start to believe we're all ships without rudders, our sails twisted by whatever winds blow, and our hulls tossed by whatever currents flow, defenseless against whatever storm may strike. It is incredible to me that, you know, you have this previous Amy, and then you have this after the tragedy, this transformation that takes place. And it wasn't immediate, but the hope was immediate. And I think the gratitude and the shift started to occur right afterward. Yes. And then it took effort. Yeah. But it was this new understanding and this new way of looking at the world. I know with my Choose Love movement, I mean, I had the same exact thing happen. So this so deeply resonated with me. I think people that haven't been through a tragedy in their life, I do believe that there is a way that they can have this transformation in their life, yes, simply if they feel like they are victims of their circumstances.
I mean, if you live long enough, there will be bad things that happen to you in this life. There just will. And no, maybe it's not that your son is murdered or that you find yourself buried alive. I mean, it may not be that dramatic news, you know, headline story that happens to you, but whatever it is, when it happens to you, it is every bit as difficult, and, you know, you have to navigate that. And so we all go through those times. And I think having the understanding that when that occurs to you, when you find yourself, and for me, it's not just been once in my life, it's been several times in my life, you know, to just realize, you know, I always say, have that pity party for a minute. You know, sometimes you got to cry the tears,
absolutely,
have the thing, but then make a plan, decide where you want to go from there, take responsibility for, okay, here's where I'm at now. And where do I go from here? And what are the smallest steps I can take today to get there? And to me, that formula of doing that is so powerful. I do it over and over again in my life every morning. And I ask myself every day, if I had a magic wand, and it might be, if I had a magic wand, how would I solve this problem? It might be everything from last year, you know, it was, if I had a magic wand, I was in kind of a deep depression. I was like, okay, I couldn't even dream anymore. You know, sometimes when you get in that downward spiral, you can't dream. You don't even know what you want. And that I literally went and bought a lottery ticket, which I don't normally do. But I thought, you know what? I don't think I could hold a lottery ticket in my hand and not at least let my brain think, what if, you know? And I went through this whole thing of, well, what if I did? Like, what would that mean? What would I change? And I wrote it all down and then said, okay, given my current situation and current limitations, I didn't win the lottery. So given that, what are the smallest steps I can do to have that life I just dreamed about? And it actually led me to, we ended up buying a small piece of property in a town that we love to ride our bikes in. It's a refuge, a wildlife refuge, with the only mountains really in Oklahoma that we have, and started dreaming again for like one day a retirement home and a place to vacation. And, you know, it just, but if I hadn't intentionally said, now, how do I take that? And how do I move forward? That wouldn't happen. This would not happen.
Isn't that interesting that you waved your magic wand and said, if I won the lottery, but you didn't win the lottery, but you were able to do what you wanted to do anyway. It just helped direct you.
Right.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Blame is a big problem. On page 33, because I just love the way that you write, so I'm quoting you. I don't always do that, but we like to blame others for our false hope. False hope exists when we have a dream or fantasy, and without any work on our part, we give it the name of hope. The truth is, hope has nothing to do with somebody doing something for you or some event happening to you. It has everything to do with you and only you, no one else.
Exactly. In other words, my hope, your hope can't be in that lottery ticket. Your hope is in what you do to move forward to that life you're imagining. It's not somebody else. You can't wait on somebody else to bring you the thing. It's not the government's fault because they didn't do something for you you wanted them to do. It's not your spouse's fault because they're not meeting this need or that need or whatever. You need to take responsibility for what it is you are wanting and needing and make steps to get there.
So important. And that is what we teach in Choose Love. We can actually teach that, so you don't literally have to be buried in rubble or have your son brutally murdered to be able to get onto the other side and to have learned from it, grown through it, and be strengthened by it. It's called post-traumatic growth. And we're
say that again, post-traumatic growth?
It's called post-traumatic growth.
I've not heard that term, and I love that. Oh, that's so good.
pay me. So this is every single time I speak to an audience, I say, who here has never heard of PTSD? I used to say, who's heard of PTSD? All hands went up. Everybody's heard of PTSD. But this is interesting. Going into the pandemic, only 7% of the population would have suffered from PTSD at one point in their life. Then I say, who's heard of PTG? No one raises their hand. And there is science behind it. It's literally how we are shaped and molded through trauma and how we grow from it. And there's science behind it. It's been researched, yet no one's heard of it because we are so focused on what can harm us and even blaming others that we don't look for how we can grow through things. And so we took this program literally, and the foundation of the entire thing is post-traumatic growth, teaching kids that whatever happens to you in life is an opportunity for growth. Our first character value is courage, the courage to face difficulty, challenges, roadblocks, pain and suffering, even tragedy in your life, and to ask, what is the opportunity for growth in this for me? It may not look exactly like that, but I know personally, for me, had I just been aware that there was something called post-traumatic growth, it would have changed my thinking from the very beginning. I mean, we're just wired to focus on the negative. We're even a little bit wired to blame other people, especially when it's not our fault. We may see our parents doing that. That dysfunction may be passed down from generation to generation. But in reality, that doesn't help us. What helps us is taking responsibility for where we are right now and where we are moving forward. And you are a role model of that. I said in the beginning, you're a role model of post-traumatic growth. And it is so true.
I love that. That is, I love the way you describe that. And I'm like you, I wish somebody would have told me that. I wish I would have known that right when I came out of the hospital. I wish someone would have sat down and shared that with me. It could have saved me some time, because it took me quite a bit of time to figure all this out, you know?
It would have saved you a lot of time. And otherwise, you're right, it is difficulty, and it's figuring out how to get through that difficulty. And it is really amazing. And so we are literally cultivating a generation after generation that has this understanding. And it's really exciting.
Very cool.
He's so cool. So on page 48, you say, I indulged in cheap, easy pleasures when joy had been hanging in the air all around me all the time. I could have seized it whenever I wanted it. This is an incredible concept. I indulged in cheap, easy pleasures. How many times do we do that to try to ameliorate the pain in our lives? Because cheap, easy pleasures are there. I have it all around me too. I've got my gallon of caramel ice cream in the fridge. I've got my Netflix. I've got my couch. There are so many cheap, easy pleasures. And you indulged in those a bit too before. Yeah. And it's so amazing. And you're right that joy is always an option. Yes. It's always an option. You know what, Amy? Jesse drew a picture that came back to us in his personal belongings. So they took everything that was out of his desk and stacked it in chronological order. And I'm going to send it to you afterwards, but it is literally a precognitive drawing. It's a drawing of how he was going to die. Kids do this. It's actually scientifically researched. And it had a picture of Jesse in the shape of a 14, which is the day that he died, in the shape of a bullet, with angel wings, with a smile on his face, by the way. And then there was a stick figure of Adam Lanza, and he had a blockhead, and he had all this, it was a pencil drawing, and the head was just all scribbled in. You could see that it was kind of angry and dark. But then when you blew the head up on a page, you saw that there were two figures in the head. And this is what this reminded me of. There was a dark figure in the back. It was almost like a, demonic figure. It had a black cloak and two black blunted wings. There was a face. There was actually a ball cap. This figure, I know that he didn't mean to draw it, but it came out of the scribbles. The figure was holding a gun, and there was a huge phallic symbol that went down into the head that in medieval times denotes evil. And then in front of this evil figure, there was another figure that was almost like a rubbing. It was like an angel. And it was a clearly defined face, a halo, almost like a biblical gown. And can you hang on for 1 second? Do you hear my dogs barking? And I know they're not gonna, they're playing on the front porch, and this rarely happens. I'm so sorry. Hang on for 1 second. My dog's names are not Bacon, but what my little Olive, my little beagle, loves bacon. She's obsessed with bacon. So all I have to do is say Bacon and she runs. if I call her by the name, she will not come. So, so there's this drawing in the inside of what is Adam Lanza's head. And it shows what you described here in your book. It shows those, both of those forces were inside the shooter's head. And he had a choice. Here's the thing. He didn't know he had a choice because he didn't have the character development and the social and emotional skills and tools to be able to figure that out. But Jesse drew it. And both of those forces were there. And I think you so beautifully say that in your book.
Wow. That is incredible. Absolutely incredible. And you're right. We do. We can choose, and we forget that sometimes. And in those dark spiral times, you know, you numb out. You just want to numb out. And so you grab the quickest, easiest thing to stop the pain. And it's temporary. It's just temporary. And really, what you really want to do is think and do what you need to do to really heal your soul and to really find joy again. And that takes a little more work and a little more effort, but it's around and it's something you can do. But we forget that, and we fall into the victim trap of I'm helpless, I can't do anything, and I'm just going to grab a glass of wine or do whatever and just, you know, put my head under the covers and not face the world, you know.
But every time you face it, and you move through it, you learn something more and you are strengthened by it. And this strengthens you to be able to handle the next, whatever it is that's coming down the pike, right?
I think it's also when you do the thing to just numb out, it's, you're really in a place, I think, of selfishness, right? You're self-centered on that because you're hurting, you're focused on your pain, you want to fix your pain. And I really have found that when I shift that off of myself and think, how can I help someone else right now? What can I do to help someone else? That brings me joy. You know, helping someone else through a struggle or a problem or whatever, that really brings me deep joy to be able to help another person. And to me, that's more powerful than numbing out with some Cheetos and, you know.
You know, I'm going to skip down because that's how I was going to end this podcast, but you've already said it. You say the greatest joy of hope is giving it to someone else. And that is so true. I mean, I do that every single day when I'm spreading Jesse's message of nurturing, healing love. It is healing for me. And I love to see my audience's faces when they have this realization that comes on them that they have the power to choose and that love is right there and they can choose it.
Yeah.
Amazing. So you're trapped upside down in your office chair, three floors above you, and you write in your book, "A peace slowly descended upon me, the way a pitched sheet settles softly on a bed. I felt myself turn inward and also outward towards something that seemed like joy, like love, like hope. It felt like God. I thanked God for being God. I thanked him for giving me everything I'd squandered. I had everything I'd ever wanted, singing to God as he embraced me in your chair, upside down, three floors smashed on top of you. Wow. It's incredible. That is amazing. What a realization in the place that you were, and it's possible regardless of whatever situation you're in.
Right.
Wow.
And there again, it was getting my eyes off of myself. And when I started singing and, you know, praising God, my focus shifted from myself and my problem, and my focus shifted to God and to love. And it changed everything, even though nothing changed. Even though really nothing changed around me, everything changed because I felt peace and love, and it changed.
It's incredible. And it was the least probable thing to happen, especially considering the person that you were.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was the kind of acceptance, mm-hmm. and then faith,
yeah.
that really, really brought you through. And then you have these superhero firefighters. I mean, firefighters are really a different breed of human being, aren't they?
They are, and they're amazing, and I'm so thankful for them because they risked their lives. They were, there was an emergency physician standing by to amputate my leg because that refrigerator was hanging overhead, and it was an industrial refrigerator, and the wind was blowing. It was unsafe. In fact, they later had to implode the building to get the last remaining bodies out that were near me because it was not safe, and they kept saying, just give us 20 more minutes, give us 20 more minutes. And the reason I have my leg today and it wasn't amputated is because those men are a special breed of crazy, and they just kept going after it to get me out. And I'm very grateful to them.
And then you brought them cookies to thank them. You said under the rubble, I'm going to bring you chocolate chip cookies. You thought about the cookies that you were going to bring them. And then the firefighter, one of them that was munching on a cookie, said, we were the lucky ones that day. I mean, this is incredible. We got to save someone. Most of our friends didn't get the chance to help anyone. We were blessed to find your hand. I mean, most people don't think like that. And I think I get emotional because, we brought cookies to our first responders as well. And I remember we split up. A lot of the moms came to one of the moms' houses, and we all had cookies, and we were going to bring them as well as signs. And I got some for, I think, the trooper station that was closest to us. And so I was all ready to go, and one of the moms said, I'm going to go with you because I don't think you can do it alone. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm just delivering cookies and a sign. I can definitely do it. So I'm like, but you can come. That's great. We go and we ring the bell, and we're walked back to the kind of the break room where there are a bunch of troopers there. And she looks at me like, you know, I'm going to say something. And I just start bawling like I am now. I couldn't say a word. I was just so overcome with gratitude for them being heroes and their courage. They are really a different kind of person. And also part of the reason that the first thing that we teach is courage in the Choose Love movement, because science tells us courage is like a muscle. We can literally strengthen it and grow it, and really distilling their hero-ness and everything that you wrote about hope being a verb in your book, courage is what gets us to that point.
Very true.
Yeah. And it was your courage as well. So page 68, you talk about the new normal. You say that's how psychologists and therapists talk about immortal scars.
Didn't you hate hearing that there was that new normal thing after you go through something traumatic and they tell you, because you just want your life back. You just want to wake up in the morning and just have it be like it used to be. And you wake up and for that split second, you know, you're waking up and then it settles on you like a, like a ton of bricks, and you just feel sick because then you remember what happened and that your life is shattered and that it's never going to be the same. And it's just awful. And then they tell you this new normal and you despise the new normal. You don't want a new normal. You want your old normal back, you know?
Yeah. And so you call it the real normal, and that's what it is, you know. And I've gotten to a point, and I know that you have too, where you look back and aside from the loved ones that we've lost and all of your friends that you lost, we would never go back to our normal because of what we've learned and how we've grown and been strengthened by our journey. And I think that's a part of post-traumatic growth as well, because if we were mourning for the lost life, that would be a lot of wasted time because it's never coming back anyway.
Right. But that transition, it's that transition from where you were before, you know, it takes courage to move forward, and in that, that post-traumatic growth has not occurred yet. So you're right in the middle of your tragedy. So it's a very difficult time that you walk through, and you have to manage your way through that. And that's where it's really great to have, you know, somebody like you sharing your story and helping people, teach them how to walk through. I wish I would have had somebody to teach me that, because it would have helped. I mean, it's still difficult and it still takes courage, but to have that person, basically you're coming along people and holding their hand and saying, look, I walked through this, you know, I went through this. And if I walked through this and went through this and I grew and I'm in a place now where I have joy and I have love, you will too one day, you know, you're giving them hope because you're showing them how you did it. And then they can see how they could do it too.
And then I'm telling them, this is what we're teaching your kids so that they can grow through anything that happens in their life and be strengthened by it. Right. You talk about immortal scars, and I've never heard immortal and scars put together, but it makes so much sense. You say that they're markers of the day we discovered one of life's hard realities. It's the day we lost our innocence, or maybe just our ignorance, that's so good, and learn the reality of pain and suffering in the world. You say that's why I don't like it when someone describes survival as recovery. Survivors never recover the person they were before the loss and trauma. For the rest of our lives, we think of our past in two phases, the person that we were before the event and the person that we became after. And almost always, if you experience post-traumatic growth, the person that you are after is a better version of the person than you were before. Of course, you would never want to have suffered the tragedy, either of us, but we are thankful for the growth.
I would say, you know, I have seen some people who are not, the after person is not better. And those are the people that don't walk through that growth phase. So there, I have seen a few people in our situation who they're still stuck and they didn't move forward and they're still a victim and they're still in that place. And so I don't know that they've gotten to a better version of themselves yet because they're still stuck, you know? And I think that's sad.
It's so true. And Amy, what would you say to those people that are listening, that are thinking, yeah, that's Amy and Scarlett, but it's not me. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that person?
I would say to that person, that dark place that you're in, the hopeless feeling that you feel, the feeling that you hear or that you have when you hear Scarlett talk and you long for that, you think, well, but that's her, you know, she's different. I'm somehow different. I'm not that person. What I would say to you is, no, you are. You don't know the power inside of you, but you've got to get your eyes off of being a victim. You've got to get your eyes off of that thing that happened to you and start dreaming again about what you want in this life. Allow yourself to dream. You've got to start dreaming again and thinking, how do I want my life to move forward? And then what can I do, the smallest thing, what can I do every single day to move toward that? And you will begin to feel some joy. You will begin to feel yourself come alive again when you start taking those steps, but you've got to take that action. If you just sit and sit in your pity party, that's what it is, you know? And no matter how bad the thing is and it wasn't your fault, you're still having a big pity party and you've got to close that, shut that party down and start walking toward this better version of yourself. Start walking toward it and you'll come alive.
I love that. That's beautiful. And on page 83, you say, for me, it took the loss and trauma of the bombing to take an honest assessment of myself and my world. All too often, it takes the searing knife of tragedy for someone to take an honest assessment. And that's exactly what you're talking about. Look at yourself, wave that magic wand. What do you want with your lottery ticket, which, by the way, is your life? You've already won the lottery because you've opened your eyes this morning. And so wave your magic wand and ask yourself what you want and then take the first small step in getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So important. On page 175, you say hope means nothing with a purpose. Hope means nothing without a purpose. And that purpose must be for a better tomorrow. Better is a virtue. Better is empowerment and freedom from a prison of your own making. And that is really powerful. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Exactly. And I think that's why we're here on Earth. Mm-hmm. That is to learn,
yes,
grow, be strengthened by whatever happens in our lives, and then use that to help others.
Yes. Yes. Amen. You know, take that, take what you're walking through. And one day that pain that you're going through, you're going to be able to use that journey to help someone else get through their pain.
Yeah. And I think I was missing that part before Sandy Hook. And now, you know, my schedule is packed and I talk every day. I have two presentations, Amy, one to a high school somewhere. And then the other, I'm literally going in person again, which is so wonderful, to speak with teachers in Connecticut. And every single time I do that, every time people say, oh my gosh, it must be so horrible to relive your story. How do you do that every day? And I say, well, first of all, I skim through my story, but I focus on what I've learned. And then sharing that with other people is so healing to myself. And I love providing that healing to others and seeing the awakening on their faces. Even if you had to picture it in emojis, because that's a lot of way we communicate, you've got the red, you've got the heart. There's actually a heart with a bandage on it. And then you've got the red heart. I use those all the time because it's all about healing, and healing is an ongoing process.
It is. And everything you just said, 100% for me too. I go through the same thing. I speak about it and I get what you're saying. You kind of have to skim through some parts, because if you ever allow yourself to really go there again, it'll bring up, you won't be able to finish your talk because it'll bring all that emotion back up. But But it is so rewarding, though, to be able to help another person and to see that look on their face and know that you just gave them a tool, you just gave them a thought, you just did something that gave them a little bit of empowerment, you know. And all of us can do that. And we don't have to go speak to a group of teachers or write a book or whatever. You do that every day with the people that you influence in your circle, your family, your kids, your coworkers, whoever. All of us can help another person, you know, walk through their journey.
We're all modeling for mm-hmm. our children and our friends and our family and our communities. We're all models. And that realization can help us to rise to the occasion. People are looking at everything that we do, and not just our words, but our actions, and they need to align. And then you can model for other people. You're so right. That's so, so important. You also say that we were obsessed with, and so I'm going to shift just for a moment into kind of business mode, because the rise that you had from teller to CEO is incredible. And if you can do it, I just want to say anybody that's listening can do it. But it is incredible. And then you were saying after the bombing, we were obsessed with keeping the status quo in the credit union. And I'm wondering, you were a part of getting everyone beyond the status quo. And I think, you know, especially in the pandemic now, everybody is, first of all, and we've talked about this, wishing that they could get their lives back the way that it was. And I'm kind of urging everybody, no, let's grow, let's use this as a tool to grow. You really don't want to go back to the way it was. Let's move forward and let's make it better. We're all out of our comfort zone right now, and that means we're in our growth zone. How did you move and help everybody move through that beyond status quo, beyond the comfort zone, into really the meteoric rise of the credit union?
Well, there was sort of a moment, you know, that immortal scar. There was a moment, and one of the newer employees had a form that she wanted to improve, because we had to hire, we lost 18 of our 33 employees. So we had to hire, you know, more than half of our staff had to be hired back quickly. So we have all these new employees, and then we have those of us that are the originals, you know, and we want to keep everything the same. We wish we could bring all the old people back and have it just like it was. So we're still stuck in wanting our old normal. Let's get that back. So this new employee brought a form and wanted to talk about changing a process and changing this form, because she said it's really outdated. We really need to do this, that, and the other. And she was presenting it to me. And I said, no, it is just fine the way it is. If it's, we're going to keep doing it this way. And I got really upset. And the reason I was upset was because my friend had created that form and created that process. And I went to the bathroom and I just started sobbing, because I realized how messed up I was, that I was trying to preserve something and it wasn't right. It was keeping us from growing and moving forward and becoming better to try to keep things the same. You can't do that. And so that was a turning point for me, that I realized I can't do that. And I went back to her and I said, you know what? I'm sorry. That had not, what you're saying is right. And we do need to do that. We do need to, you know, go ahead, give her the, you know, let's move ahead, let's do it. And I think that was sort of the turning point of realizing we need to tap into how we're going to move and get better and not try to stay the same.
It's interesting, because our brains are wired to keep us safe, and change is growth, but change is also a little scary.
Yes.
So we need
that courage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We need courage to move through that change. Another thing that you say in your book, which is really beautiful, is accepting the broken nature of our world is maybe the most difficult phase of healing from trauma and loss. The unfairness of nature's impartial cruelty and humanity's intentional acts of evil are tough realities to accept. Mm-hmm. how do we accept this? I mean, we have, you know, for the first time, 24/7 global information on our cell phones. We get more information in one day today than we did in a lifetime 100 years ago. Our brains have not caught up. They're not designed. So there's so much overwhelm in this world. And we're now seeing difficulty that's happening all over our world, not just in our own lives. So Amy, you know, from in your words, how do we do that? How do we accept the broken nature of this world?
Right. You know, that's difficult. Truly it is. You know, and I haven't necessarily arrived all the time with that, but you know, for me, what I have to do is I have to really limit one, you were talking about information. I have to limit that for myself. So I think it's probably different for each person on how they come to terms with dealing with all the brokenness around them, you know. And you know, one way for me is to, instead of focusing on the brokenness of the world and the brokenness of everything that's happening, is to focus on how to help, you know, how to help. How do you come along, understand and accept this is it. I don't know why our world is like this. I have no idea. I have no clue. Can't answer any of those, but it is what it is. And we can all look around and agree, yeah, it's messed up. Okay, fine. So that's a fact, right? That's a given. So now what do we do with it? You know, given our current situation, limitations, that this world is screwed up, now what do we do with that? Well, for me, if I focus on, instead of being bitter about the way it is, focus on how to help other people, or even how to help myself, even how to walk through whatever the thing is that I just got handed that's not fair. Okay, fine. Now, how do I walk through that? And I think that's a form of acceptance, because you're accepting where you're at, what just happened to you, even if it's not wasn't your fault, to accept this is what has happened. And then don't stay in that acceptance. Don't stay in that pity party place. But okay, now how do we move forward? You know, I think that's, for me, how I deal with it.
That's incredible. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, wow, you're describing compassion in action. So we have this formula that is derived from Jesse's message of nurturing, healing, love. It starts with courage, because courage is the most important character value. We need courage to do everything good in our lives. And then it's gratitude. And I see how you actually went through each of these steps. So even in your chair upside down, which is just mind blowing, you felt this incredible gratitude. Then forgiveness. I know that there was a time when you had to forgive your old self and the old thinking and the old decisions that you had made to move forward into this new life. And then compassion in action, which is having the courage to step outside of whatever's going on in the world or even your own life to help somebody else. I mean, that is taking it all the way to what we were saying before, which is the greatest joy of hope is giving it to someone else and stepping outside of ourselves so that we don't do that blame game and the spiral, the helplessness, the hopelessness, the victimization, but we take personal responsibilities, at least for ourselves, and then try to help somebody else. I mean, that is what we need to move towards. That's the meaning of life, I think, is being able to move through whatever happens with grace. And then using what you've learned to help others. And you, Amy, you have absolutely done that with this incredible book, Hope is a Verb, My Journey of Impossible Transformation. You've literally transformed in every single way. I'm reading the back, the incredible journey of a 355-pound college dropout who survived a bomb and became a CEO and an Ironman triathlete and a mom. And how is Austin doing?
Oh my gosh, he's doing wonderful. Today is a big game. It's the OU Texas, if you're a football fan, OU Texas football, which is a big deal. And he's on the drum line. So he is headed to Texas to play. He will graduate next year from college, and he's doing good.
That is amazing. That's amazing. Well, I just want to thank you so much for being on the podcast, sharing your story and your insights, what you've learned, how you've grown. It is really an incredible journey. You have enriched all of us. Anybody who reads your book cannot walk away being the same person. I know I didn't.
Thank you so much. And I've learned from you, you know, hearing your story and hearing this description of post-traumatic growth, I am going to use that. I'm going to share that message with others because people need to hear that. I love that post-traumatic growth.
Post-traumatic growth. And you can learn to move through it. And especially now, when there's so much trauma in the world, we've got kids with growing trauma. We've got big kids with a lot of trauma. And that is actually an opportunity for growth. I know we don't always view it that way, but it is. And so thank you for sharing your story of post-traumatic growth. You are amazing. You are now forever a part of the Choose Love family. And I'm just so grateful. I would love to send you my book, Nurturing Healing Love.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for sharing yourself with us and for choosing love.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
We're making hand hearts. You can't see that to one another. So thank you so much, Amy. We really appreciate you taking the time to share with us. We'll let you know when this is ready and then you can share it. And
Thank awesome. You so much.
Thanks so much.
I hope
yes.
that this year, this next year, as we move in and we come out of this season, that your message is going to touch so many lives. So many people need to hear this right now, because that 7% that experienced PTSD, mm-hmm. I'm betting is more like 100% right now with what's gone on in our world, and people need to hear your message. So I pray that you will have strength to continue doing what you're doing and that your message will reach so many people because they need to hear it. So thank you. And let me know when it's available and I will share it with everybody.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Amen.
Have a good day.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's all part of us. We can all choose love. It'll lift you up if you let it in. Let the